Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
It's that time of night, you can't stay uptight. So come and join the people and I'm feeling all right. Here on Overnight America. Overnight America.
Welcome back. We're here for another hour and up until 2 o'clock. What we're going to do, at least this hour to start off, I got a few things to mention. And then our interview with Rich Rubino, you know, from pretty much every other Monday night we do an interview and we talk about politically what's going on. But in general, does it have any coincidences with the past? Does it have any parallels to the past? Where have we seen things like this in the past? And he's got some really interesting things to say about picking a vice presidential candidate. There's a lot of times we can go back and say, I wonder how things would have turned out if he would have picked someone else. So we're going to look at some of those instances too with Rich Rubino coming up in a few minutes. So a few things legal-wise. I saw this on the Wall Street Journal. Looks like NBC Nightly News aired a piece on a company called Smile Direct Club. And when that piece ran, apparently the company, Smile Direct Club, did not like it. And apparently they feel that it's defamatory and their news reports were wrong and inaccurate. And because of it, they filed a lawsuit against NBC Universal for $2.85 billion. Whoo, boy. That's a big number. Now, I don't know how much this company was making and how much they haven't made since then or whatever it is. These are very difficult lawsuits to take to court. And the Smile Direct Club attorney in the suit says these stories are kind of like the pink slime stories that you saw from before. And every once in a while, you get those reports out there. And I think the trust in the media is an all-time low. I think people are always skeptical that there's some sort of, you know, something else going on there. And there's an awful, awful lot of people that could look at the track record in the batting average of some of these different newscasts and say, well, it's never been lower. I mean, we're not at all-star levels right here. You know, you can go back and see this Jordan documentary that came out from ESPN called The Last Dance. And you can look and say, man, that Jordan guy, he was so good. Look at all the things he was able to do. I don't think we're looking at an era where there's a bunch of Jordans out there when it comes to news media. I think basically we're in a dark period when it comes to journalistic integrity. So, yeah, never would I think that times like these you would be able to sue things like NBC Nightly News and win, but you might have a shot or at least get something out of it. Who knows? The other thing I saw, and the San Francisco Chronicle put this one out, delusional Martin Shkreli denied prison release by judge. I didn't realize we were the same age. Do you remember Martin Shkreli? He's same age as me. Wow. He's the guy that went out there and bought up a patent, basically, and it was used for people that had issues when it came to allergies. And very, you know, life-saving type of things. And he took the thing and he made it so it was impossibly expensive. And he said, you know what I'm going to do? This is how I'm going to make my money. Well, he got into all kinds of trouble, not just for that practice, but for other things that were going on. But now that he's in prison, the judges rejected the former pharmaceutical executive to be let out of prison because he said, hey, I got experience in pharmaceutical. You know what you should do? This is a great idea. Hey, I'm a genius. You should really listen to me. Let me out of jail, and I'm going to help people, and I'm going to be able to, I don't know, fix this whole coronavirus thing. We're going to come up with some cocktails to put together, and hey, we might be able to come out with a drug or something. It's for the American good that I get released from jail. Of course, word has gotten back to all of these different prisons that there are politicians advocating that criminals get let out of jail because of this coronavirus. It's no joke, and it's a sad thing when Nancy Pelosi gets together and puts into this latest $3 trillion spending package that, hey, we need to release people out of prison over a certain age just for now, you know, to take care of this sort of thing, as long as we can't name a specific person that they were going to hurt. You got to be kidding me on all this. You know, when it comes to reform, they got to try to put, you know, this in there when it comes to people that are desperate to saving their livelihood and their businesses and their families, and you got to try to make this part of it. So he, I think, played right into that. He realized there might be an opportunity to strike here when there are a lot of sympathetic people on the far left right now that want to release as many people from prison as possible. At least the judge said, no, thanks. You're delusional. We're not letting you out. Are you nuts? So he's in a low-security prison in Pennsylvania. He's been locked up. No cases of coronavirus in the inmates and staff over there as yet. So he had to forfeit a bunch of money when two hedge funds he ran were withdrawing more money than the funds were entitled to get. He was defrauding investors in a drug company, and he was hiding ownership of some of its stock. Those are the things he got in trouble for, but he was highly criticized for the way that he took the different drugs that he was purchasing and then jacking up the price as high as possible. And it was actually a really sad, sad display of greed. And in general, it didn't surprise me that all these bad things happened to him after the fact, because that's what those type of people do. How about in a couple of minutes, I want to air our interview with Rich Urbino. If you missed it from earlier, I think you're really going to enjoy it. We're going to look at some vice presidential picks and how those things are balancing out. If you want to like on Facebook, Ryan Recker Radio is how you do it. Ryan Recker Radio. How about you go online and just give a little like to that Facebook page right now. It's Overnight America, KMOX.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
St. Louis's weather station, KMOX.
You hear him on Mondays, his book, American Politics on the Rocks. You can also look him up online with politi-geek.com. Rich Rubino, thank you so much for coming back to KMOX.
Thanks so much for having me on again, Ryan.
This is a time where people are starting to go back outside. Who knows? Maybe we'll start to see more campaigning and things like that. I noticed today that the Republicans said they're going to not hold a virtual convention. So they're going to at least try to go forward or have some confidence that there'll be some sort of normalcy. So that's, I guess, maybe a good sign. Who knows what the Democrats, I don't know if they've decided on that yet.
Yeah, that actually, that term, return to normalcy, that was actually Warren G. Harding, his campaign slogan back in 1920. And the idea was that Woodrow Wilson had gone to World War One. There had been interventions in the economy, interventions overseas. And Harding essentially ran a very similar campaign with Donald Trump. They were very similar ideologically in terms of being economic nationalists, being conservative in some respects. And he basically read, he said, we're going to return to normalcy when we get elected. And now it's kind of interesting that Joe Biden's platform, a lot of people are saying that he wants to return to normalcy. So it's kind of come full circle exactly 20 years later.
Yeah. You know what we see on sports networks normally when there is sports, but since there hasn't been, but they always do the power rankings when they talk about teams and specific leagues and they say, okay, who's the top teams? Who's this or that? Do you keep a power ranking for VP picks for Joe Biden?
I don't, because it's so unpredictable in the case of Joe Biden, because it's just amazing how many names are coming out. The people, you're not thinking about these names, and there are so many. There are all these conventional names. The first people I think most people's mind's eye goes to is, well, they say, well, who ran against them? So they say immediately Amy Klobuchar, then they say Elizabeth Warren, then they say Kamala Harris. So those are kind of the conventional picks. So I guess you could say those were the top of the power rankings, but I find it more interesting sometimes to think of some of the other people's names that have come up. For example, Terry Sewell, who I think very few people had actually heard of, and there was a report in the National Review, and they said that this is somebody who would be a very good, safe pick. African-American, represents a congressional district in Alabama, Southerner, Ivy League degrees, very articulate. This is somebody who a lot of people all of a sudden are now all of a sudden trying to vet a little bit. Mm-hmm. Or the other one is Val Demings, the congresswoman from Orlando. You know, a couple months ago, prior to the impeachment hearings of Donald Trump, very few people had heard of her. But she really, I think, became kind of a star in there for kind of the Democratic intelligentsia. Now all of a sudden you see her name out there. So I think it's just interesting. You know, you're going to hear names of people that you probably never even heard of. And some of these people are just kind of trial balloons. And all of a sudden, you know, with the internet, with the World Wide Web, everything goes viral. And all of a sudden this person gets national attention because of that. So it's just a fascinating process. But I think, you know, ranking it, you kept kind of conventional candidates. And then I put the conventional candidates, the folks that everybody is kind of considering, then I put a second or third tier, people who very few people are considering, but who I think might actually be interesting choices.
You know, what's interesting, too, about all of this is what do they bring to the table? So there are certain traits and aspects that a pick can actually help the candidate running for president. And I'm wondering, if you are a Joe Biden, what are the traits that are most appealing to you that you think will help you gain the presidency?
Well, I think in Joe Biden's case, part of the appeal that he needs is he needs every possible Bernie Sanders supporter that he can potentially get. And a lot of those Bernie Sanders supporters are going to go for Joe Biden because they view they're antithetical to Donald Trump. They may not necessarily like Joe Biden. Joe Biden may not have been their first, second, third, or fourth choice, but Joe Biden's not Donald Trump. But there is a small segment of the Democratic Party, of the very liberal wing of the Democratic Party, who view Joe Biden as kind of an anathema to what they believe in. They think Joe Biden, they'll keep calling him a corporatist, say that he's a militarist. They'll say that he's a friend of the credit card industry, his support for the Iraq war. A lot of them have not forgiven. So as a result, you look for somebody who can potentially fill those holes. Now, the other thing where Joe Biden, but he does not necessarily have he doesn't really have a blind spot in terms of the minority community. I mean, part of the reason he's a nominee is because in South Carolina, after Jim Clyburn, very popular Democratic congressman from South Carolina, endorsed him, he got two-thirds of, you know, the African-American vote, and then he ended up doing very well in the African-American vote in Alabama and Arkansas and Mississippi and Tennessee. So that's constituency, though, that he potentially needs to – he needs to monopolize it, just because Hillary Clinton, you saw a drop-off, a lot of the Obama supporters in the African-American and the Hispanic community – some that he did not do nearly as well as Obama had done in 2008 and 2012. So that's something you definitely have to look for. And, of course, you also, to a certain degree, you know, it's a delicate balancing act, because on the one hand, you have to propitiate the left. If you get somebody who's too far left, though, it gives them a lot of fodder, and they're going to try to make the case that Joe Biden is basically, that Joe Biden is, you know, is become captive or hostage to the liberal bloodline of the Democratic Party, and he does not represent the center of the country. So it's really a delicate balancing act for Joe Biden here.
You know, I wonder with some of these different names that you've heard, and there's one over on the Illinois side that you believe could be vetted on this point. Can you tell us a little bit about that and who we should keep an eye out for?
Well, I'm interested. So Terry Bustos, so she's the chairwoman of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. She was a journalist for about 16 years. She's really a dark horse candidate. And she, but she, part of her, the of her interest is she comes from a very rural district in Illinois, and she does well there, and she does very well with traditionally Republican voters, with centrist voters. And as a matter of fact, part of the reason, by the way, the Congressional Campaign Committee, just so people know, it's essentially about third in the leadership of the Democratic Party. And basically its job is to get Democrats elected around the country. So they determine, for example, who the frontline candidates are, who the most vulnerable Democrats are, and whether their seat is worth saving, how much money to put in, how much largesse to put in. And she's a very attractive candidate in many respects, because part of the reason she's elected is because she appeals to conservatives, she appeals to moderate, and she has a message that resonates in a very conservative district in Illinois. In fact, she's the only member of the Illinois congressional delegation that actually does not represent Chicagoland. You know, Illinois is a very interesting state because you have right around Chicago, the south side of Chicago, extremely heavily Democratic, but then the rest of the state, certainly downstate Illinois, for example, very conservative. So she's kind of she'd be a very interesting dark horse choice, I believe.
You know, I like how you say Chicago. I can tell that Massachusetts, that's in there a little bit. Different parts of the country.
It's like when I say Oregon, I try to say Oregon because I know they get very offended. I know that's something that could start a civil war. So
I know. Well, they'll find you all the way across the end of the different coast. Rich Rubino, American Politics on the Rocks, joining us here on Overnight America. And I wonder, too, about these different searches. We might have to talk about this a little bit after the break, but there's been a lot of past VP searches. I'm wondering if there's any interesting stories there. And also, maybe some that have been reached out to that perhaps have been offered the job but have rejected it. In fact, I actually interviewed someone that was interviewed to be a vice presidential pick, and I wanted to tell you that story coming up next, if you don't mind holding on for a minute.
Wonderful.
Rich Rubino, American Politics on the Rocks. Check his book out. Go to Amazon, order it. If you know someone that loves this, you know, talking stories and history of politics, then how about you pick the book up for them? Just deliver it right to them. Amazon's good with that. Politi-geek.com is his website. We'll be right back with Rich Rubino on Overnight America, KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
This is Overnight America, sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com on KMOX.
And joining us now is our friend that we have on every Monday. His name is Rich Rubino, American Politics on the Rocks. You can look him up online, politi-geek.com. And we're kind of in a weird moment because this would be really, you know, full throttle when it comes to campaigning. But thanks to the coronavirus, it doesn't feel like full throttle. It feels like we're kind of pushing back the political season, even though we know that date is still set in stone in November. So, Rich, I wanted to talk to you about a couple of different things, and one of which is the VP search in general. We talked a little bit about some candidates that have been brought up lately in the news, but I want to go back and talk about some other presidential candidates that were running for office that were doing VP searches. I'm curious if there's any other search committees that come to mind. Maybe they have reached out to certain politicians and found out that maybe they don't want to be their vice presidential pick. Has that happened before?
Oh, absolutely. The most fascinating one is what you have to go all the way back to 1884. And actually, back in 1884, the trick to the Republicans had, you know, their biggest issue was civil service reform. And you had Republicans who were supportive of civil service reform and those who were opposed to it. James Garfield, the congressman from Ohio, a steadfast supporter of civil service reform, won the nomination. And he actually the first person he offered the job to was a senator named was a U.S. representative rather from New York named Levy Morton. And Levy Morton was, of course, opposed to civil service reform. And Roscoe Conkling, who was a senator from New York, who was basically, you know, he was the political boss of New York at the time. And Conkling told them, he said, you know what, do not accept this. It's going to be essentially dead for you. If James Garfield chooses you, you're going to be a vice president for 4 or 8 years, and you're never going to be able to be president yourself. Garfield's going to lose this time, then 4 years down the road, run for president yourself. So Morton, who had a lifelong ambition to become president, and general ambition, says, all right, I'm not going to do it. So you know what Garfield does? He goes to Chester Arthur. And Levy Morton goes to Chester Arthur. Chester Arthur was the head of the port of he collected the tariffs in New York State, very powerful opponent of civil service reform. And Morton beseeches him. He says, please do not take this. But Arthur says, you know what? I'm going to take it. So Arthur takes it. And then 9 months later, James Garfield's dead and Chester Arthur becomes president.
Wow.
Levy Morton actually, he did actually become vice president in 1889 when Benjamin Harrison chose him. So he thought maybe that was the way that he could get it. But of course, Benjamin Harrison lost re-election himself. Eventually, Levy Morton came too old and he kind of faded in political time. And now very few people know who he is. There was one other example that's really fascinating, though. In 1968, Hubert Humphrey garners the Democratic nomination. This is a time when there was a very liberal bloodline in the Republican Party. And New York Governor Nelson Rockefeller ran in the primaries against Richard Nixon, and he lost in the primaries. And he was very liberal, and he had Jackie Robinson support him. He had a lot of support actually in the African American community in the Republican primary. So Hubert Humphrey made overtures to him and said, "What if we had a bipartisan ticket?" So in other words, you'd have a Democrat and a Republican. And Rockefeller essentially said, "No, I'm a loyal Republican," and he said, "I'm not going to take the nomination." And this actually came out in 1976 when Hubert Humphrey wrote his memoirs. He said, yeah, that he offered it to him, and he rejected it. And it's interesting because Nelson Rockefeller, going all the way back to Truman days, the Democrats always said, we could do better. You can do better if you're a Democrat. You need to become a Democrat, and he never did. So Humphrey offered it to him, rejected it. Eventually, Gerald Ford becomes president after Nixon's resignation in 1974, and Nelson Rockefeller is his choice to become vice president. So Nelson Rockefeller does become vice president under Ford, and he accepts it. And then in 1976, Ford dumped him from the ticket because conservatives, really a lot of they were apoplectic that Nelson Rockefeller had actually been on his ticket. So as a result, he chose Bob Dole, who was seen as more conservative at the time. But that would have been a fascinating bipartisan ticket. And by the way, Richard Nixon, after the 1968 election, they had a meeting with him and Hubert Humphrey in Miami. And he actually offered Democratic vice president, the ambassadorship to the United Nations, which he turned down. Humphrey said, you know, how do you go from being vice president under Lyndon Johnson? Now you're an ambassador to the United Nations from Richard Nixon. But it would have been fascinating had Rockefeller actually accepted Humphrey's overtures. You would have actually had a bipartisan ticket.
Wow. Yeah, I wanted to ask you about a few of the more contemporary presidents, and maybe we can go back and talk about some of the potential picks that they could have looked at. And I'm just kind of curious about that because it's easy for us to look at some of the more recent presidents and think about what could have happened, right? Who could they have picked? In some cases, they became president. In other cases, they didn't. But there was one in particular. When I first moved here to St. Louis, I had an opportunity to interview the former senator here from Missouri, John Danforth. And
oh, yes.
We talked about his phone call from Dick Cheney. He was being vetted for George W. Bush at the time when he was at least running for president. And I thought that would have been an interesting pick, John Danforth as vice president. Well, ultimately, Dick Cheney was the one that came in and became the vice president. But still, I like to look at those what could have happened moments. And I'm curious if we can go back in. Like, let's just go back to the previous presidency, President Obama. Do you remember any of the potential picks that he was going to run with before he picked Joe Biden?
Yeah, by the way, Danforth, interestingly, he was also on the short list for George H.W. Bush back in 1988. And they chose Dan Quayle that year. The 41-year-old senator from Indiana, in part, they sent out fire balloons in terms of conservatives would not have accepted Danforth as a nominee, but he was on Bush's shortlist as well, and so he was on both Bush's shortlist. In Barack Obama, so basically what it came down to at the end in terms of Joe Biden, they had a long list of potential candidates. There were some overtures at the time to Chuck Hagel, the senator from Nebraska, who was a Republican, and actually a pretty conservative Republican, but he had been against the Iraq War. The fact that he was against abortion rights was a non-starter within the Democratic Party, similar to back in 2008, that same year, John McCain had actually considered Joe Lieberman as his running mate, the senator from Connecticut, who actually came out, one of the few Democrats who came out and supported his candidacy, but they made a similar overture to see how that would go within the mainstream of the Republican Party. And they said, no, nobody who supports abortion rights will be on our ticket. So as a result, John McCain picked Sarah Palin. But there were certainly a lot of people in John McCain's orbit, including Lindsey Graham, supposedly, who said he really should have chose Joe Lieberman. In the case of Barack Obama, there were other candidates. There was Evan Bayh, the senator from Indiana.
Oh, yeah.
He was certainly on the short list. He was actually on the short list a couple times. He was on Al Gore's shortlist in 2000, and then he was on the shortlist of John Kerry in 2004. And in all three of those cases, the fact that he had been somewhat moderate when it came to abortion rights in terms of late-term abortions, he was seen as somewhat of a non-starter in all of those episodes. And partly they landed up choosing Joe Biden at the end. He was somebody there were a lot of overtures within the establishment of the Democratic Party. A lot of kind of blue-collar Democratic constituencies said that this is the guy that we need, even though, they vetted him. It's interestingly because he ran in 1987 and 1988 as well, and it turned out there was a plagiarism scandal. So they obviously decided going through the vetting process that was not going to be a problem, that they would not nominate him. So they did nominate him. He became the nominee, and, of course, now he's running again for president himself. The most fascinating one, though, I think, is Bob Graham. Because Bob Graham, the senator from Florida, he was vetted three times. So he was vetted in 1988. He was seriously vetted. He was a former governor of Florida. He'd never lost any elections in that critical swing state. He became a senator from Florida. And Mike Dukakis seriously considered him in 1988. They were very good friends. They had actually gone to Harvard Law School together. They're in the same class in 1956, Harvard Law School. They've become very good friends. And they were actually asked Mike Dukakis at one point, how would you appeal to conservative voters? He said, well, I'm going to talk to Bob Graham, and partly because he was able to do that in the state of Florida. The other thing, Bob Graham had signed about 150 death executions, and put one of Michael Dukakis' blind spots, at least in the mainstream of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, and one of George W. Bush's, one of his biggest campaign criticisms of Dukakis was he was weak on crime. So that was one of the possible assets. He landed up not getting chosen. Lloyd Benson, the senator from Texas, got chosen instead. And then, of course, Bill Clinton seriously considered him in 1992. He came on the short list. He landed up choosing Al Gore instead. In 2000, though, Al Gore was seriously considering him. Now, remember, this is the guy who had a 70% job approval rating in the state of Florida. And no Republican has ever been elected president since 1924 with Calvin Coolidge without carrying the state of Florida. He was very popular in the state of Florida. And, of course, the 2000 election came down to Florida, and it came down to about 597 votes. And a lot of people within the Democratic Party believe that had Bob Graham been on that ticket, there would never have been a hanging chad. There would never have been a controversy. Gore would potentially have won that state by about 4 or 5 points. They landed up choosing Joe Lieberman in part because members of the Democratic Leadership Council, who had gotten Bill Clinton elected in 1992, the moderate Democratic Advocacy Organization, it's now defunct, and they had supported Al Gore in 1992 being the choice. They lobbied for Joe Lieberman. Joe Lieberman also had a very simpatico personal relationship with Al Gore, and that certainly helped. But one of the biggest criticisms of Bob Graham was that he took notes on just about everything that he would do. So he'd wake up, he'd write down what he was going to do for breakfast, what he was eating for breakfast, who he meets with, what he does basically all day long, where he exercised, where he jogged. And they were afraid. And this is all three cases, the case of Clinton, the case of Dukakis, and the case of Al Gore. They were afraid that people would look at this and they'd say that he's got erratic behavior and he's not meant to be vice president. And this actually hurt him himself when he landed up running for president in 2004. And his presidential campaign that year, of course, ended up being a non-starter, in part because a lot of people looked at that and they thought that was erratic behavior. But you wonder, had he not done that, and had he actually been Al Gore's running mate, I think history would have been a lot different. And I think it's very hard to make the case that those 597 votes and more would not have gone to Al Gore had the very popular Bob Graham been on that ticket.
I think they're still finding votes from that in Florida.
And you know, interesting piece of trivia, when you say hanging Chad, the word Chad, the plural of Chad is not Chad's, it's Chad.
So the plural is the same, Chad and Chad.
Yes, yes.
Not bad.
It's kind of one of those things, interesting, it's like when they say attorney general, you don't say attorney generals, you say attorneys general. It's something that people don't understand, but it's one of those grammatical truisms.
Oh, it's like you don't say Canadian geese, it's still Canada geese.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you can say it any way you want. 99% of the people won't figure out. Or the other one, a myriad of. You're not to say, so say a myriad. You're supposed to say a myriad something, not a myriad of. Or you're not really, you're supposed to say a myriad.
You know, it sounds like you don't spend enough time on social media, because if you do say it the wrong way, even though everyone understands it, oh, there'll be people that try to correct you.
And never spell your the wrong way there. I mean, that will start. You think there's a lot going on in this world. That is going to start an absolute civil war. There are going to be a lot of people that are just going to be so apoplectic at you.
Yeah. Or there. There's a couple of them.
Oh, no. Don't even go there. Don't even go there. Yeah.
There.
And as you did, put the word like and in there a couple of times,
yeah.
too.
Rich Rubino, American Politics on the Rocks, PolitiDegeek.com. I always enjoy our conversations. Thanks for coming back. And if people wanted to find you on social media, what's the best place?
Yep, you can just go to Facebook and type in Rich Rubino, R-U-B-I-N-O, or just go to Twitter and go to Rich Rubino, P-O-L.
So is that a challenge? You want people to find you on Twitter and try to find grammatical errors?
Yeah. I might make them just to show how impavid and how bold I am at this, I guess.
I love it.
I see it all the time. People always spell your, and as soon as somebody doesn't put that apostrophe, someone's always going to correct it. I find it a fascinating phenomenon.
Looking forward to next week, and who knows what's going to change between now and then. Thank you for coming on to Overnight America.
Thank you so much.
And he joins us on the TDK Technologies guest line on Overnight America, KMOX.
If you've been hurt by a truck, you can call Colombo Law 24/7, and we'll be there to make sure you're taken care of. When someone is hurt by a truck, Colombo Law is the law firm people call to get answers. Hurt by a truck? Call Colombo Law.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Now back to Overnight America on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
And welcome back. We're going to play a game. Why is this trending? So here is what's trending right now on Twitter. Mel Gibson. He's been in a lot of big hit movies, The Lethal Weapons. Now think about everything Mel Gibson's done. What has he done in order to trend? Now, trending either goes two ways, as in someone did something really good or someone did something really bad. And it's always someone complaining about something when someone went bad. Here is what Mel Gibson is trending about. Are you ready? Go ahead. If you want, I'll give you another couple seconds to take a guess. Just say it out loud. If you're at your house, whisper it so you don't wake anyone up. If you're in your car, okay, what did Mel Gibson do to start trending? The 64-year-old actor went to go get groceries in Los Angeles. Yeah, he went outside. Can you believe it? Mel Gibson went outside. The star, him and his girlfriend went outside to go get groceries. And people are upset. How dare he leave his residence during a quarantine? Let me read this other thing real quick that I was going to get from Prevention. Prevention.com. Is it safe to stay in a hotel? There's one line in this that I think sums up everything that we need to put into perspective when it comes to life with the coronavirus in it. Here's the quote, and this is from a senior scholar at Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. Quote, nothing is entirely safe. Nothing is entirely safe. I think that's something that is important to remember, because nothing is entirely safe. There's always going to be risks. There's always going to be whatever you do. You may think that there is something that is entirely safe. Not the case. There's always something that could go wrong. There's always a chance that something could go wrong. And there's some things that are very safe and some things more safe than others. But again, nothing is entirely safe. So here's what they say. So what are the biggest risks when you stay at a hotel? They say person-to-person contact is a pretty high risk. When people are within 6 feet from each other, the virus can spread between infected respiratory droplets produced when an infected person coughs, sneezes, or talks. These droplets then can land in the mouths or noses of nearby people. Some people are wondering, you know, you touch your face, you touch things where these droplets could be. Inside, they seem to last a lot longer than they would outside with a little bit of humidity, heat, and, of course, the UV light. CDC points out that it is possible to contact COVID-19 from touching an infected surface and then touching your mouth, nose, or your eyes. But the organization says the main way that you spread it is through direct contact with someone else. So keep that in mind. Now, is your hotel room going to be safe? Some people say that you need to contact the hotel in advance and ask them what they need to be done when it comes to cleaning. So are they actively cleaning it? What is done when it comes to cleaning? And in the hospitality business, I'd be really curious, you know, what are people doing right now in trying to fix the and fix the mindset that people are going to be going into a room that has just incredible amounts of coronavirus everywhere. How about this one, too? You know those shows in the late night shows, they're really good at doing this. They'll go into the hotel rooms with a black light and they'll say, let's turn this on and see what we can see. It makes me shiver just thinking about it. It's never good. So what happens when they go in and if they try to test these things? You think they'll find it? Probably. I mean, that's the thing. They were testing everything for a while. We need to test this cardboard box to see if we can find coronavirus. It says until there's a vaccine, people are taking risks. And there's no data when it comes to hotels or anything else like that. Some people may or may not feel comfortable doing it. There's other areas inside the hotel that people congregate. So the restaurants or common areas, those are probably more dangerous than the room itself. It also depends on how long it was before someone else that was in that room before you. It all's a thing. It says room service is the best option for food if you can afford it. Wipe down commonly touched surfaces such as door handles, toilet handles, faucets in the remote with bleach wipes. Travel with the bleach wipes. It always freaks me out a little bit going into a hotel room, knowing that what and who touched this remote and what could be on this remote. There was an episode of The Middle. Was it The Middle? Or what? It was one of those. Maybe it was Everybody Loves Raymond's. It was one of those episodes where. No. It was, it doesn't matter. It's one of those shows that were in the same vein where the couple goes to the vacation spot and the dad pulls out a Ziploc gallon baggie and he puts the remote control in that Ziploc and zips it up. He said, you think I'm going to touch that remote control? That's how I feel. When I'm in a hotel room, I don't go barefoot. I always wear socks. Like, I don't want my skin touching the ground. I don't trust the comforter. The only thing I really trust is the sheets, and I please hope the sheets get cleaned. Ugh, I don't want to think about it. Sometimes it's better not to think about it. But in general, is it safe? Yeah, it'll probably be fine. There's a risk to everything. There's always a risk to every single thing. Well, that about does it for us here on Overnight America. You can find me on Twitter at Ryan Recker. If you want to, on Facebook, Ryan Recker Radio. It's a great way to stay connected to this radio program. Go and like it. Tell your friends to like it. Tell your friends' friends to like it. If you know someone that can't stand shows like this, go and tell them to like it anyway. You know, why not? I would like for them to get into it. But either way, I just enjoy this time we spend together. We're going to have another big show for you tomorrow. Wednesday night is the huge show. If you missed the announcement yesterday and then I repeated the announcement today, we have that radio documentary I produced that I'm going to air on Wednesday night from 9 until 11. Go and get that announcement on the podcast section at KMOX.com. And Bob Costas is joining us in the 11 o'clock hour, which is really exciting that night, too. Enjoy the rest of your night. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.